Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Ghost reporting for duty here on a Sunday night. As I'm watching Sunday Night Football out of the corner of my eye, we're going to talk to you about mixed martial arts and bare knuckle fighting for the next hour or so. Two big events took place this past weekend. UFC Fight Night, Dariush versus Sarukian. What else did they call it? UFC on... Oh, good. I can't find the numbered series. That's even better because it just adds to the confusion. It was a fight night, though, in Austin. Pretty big deal for the UFC, too. We'll go over that. Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship 56. I'm positive with that number. That took place as well. Huge pay-per-view for that promotion. And, of course, the latest news. We'll get the show started. Man goes, I'm so gutted for Benny Dariush. Literally, yeah. 1 year ago, this guy, we were all clamoring for a title shot. He deserved a title shot. Now, I'm not saying he would have been the greatest lightweight ever. I'm not even saying he would have won the title. And if he did, he would have had, you know, a defense. I don't know. He had his chance, though, and the politics of this game just shoved him aside. And now he's got two big losses, accompanied by two huge KOs. You know, the brain is never the same. Sucks, man. He's such a nice guy, you know what I mean? But congrats to Armand Sarukian, who put it on Benny Dariush in the main event at UFC Austin.
It was so quick, you know, not much of a fight really developed. At first, it looked like the knee was something that did something, but it really wasn't. And, you know, now that it was such a wham performance that, like, you kind of wanted to see more out of it, but it puts Sarukian's name up there with the top dogs. Now, I think people need to pump the brakes a little bit, but it doesn't get any better than that for Sarukian. And for Benny, he's got to figure out what does he want to do, you know, because the rebuilding process is really going to take a while.
Yeah. But, you know, Benny, a few guys just didn't want to fight him because they didn't think he had a sexy enough name. And his win streak was impressive, but it wouldn't get him a shot. But yet the UFC didn't really, how can I put this to you? They didn't really look bad in the process because he didn't make a big deal out of it. I'm not trying to make a big deal out of it because it's in the past. I'm just gutted for him. This is a guy we've covered for his rise through the UFC, a couple downs, and then the come up again. And, yeah, I think part of it, too, was I was expecting a greater fight between the two. And what I mean by that is whether Benny won or Armand Sarukian won, I guess I wanted to see a lot more. And that way each guy's stock doesn't drop too far. And but you know, right now I think Benny's is going to take a hit a little bit because that's two in a row. Killers, by the way, Benil Dariush, Armand Sarukian and Charles Oliveira. I mean, Charles Oliveira is a former champion, and Armand Sarukian is a stud, man. He's going to be fighting for a title soon. So I want to say no shame in that. It's just that his loss, you know, his age and the losses. I just kind of see possibly the end here for him. Now, you'll always hear me say this, but you got your Robbie Lawlers of the world. You got your Michael Bispings of the world, guys that were in the division for a long time and kept coming back. And then they had a chance to win a world title later in their career, and they did it. So I guess that can happen. And, you know, recently goes, didn't it seem like Aljamain Sterling was in a bantamweight for a long time with some ups and downs, and then he did it too. You know, I don't know if his was as long of a journey as the other guys, but it can happen.
Here's another option too, is like depending on what your contract is or what, like, God, PFL just seems so sexy to me. Just go over there and try and make $1 million, right? Can you beat OAM? That's the first question. He looks like he's not going to be around for another one of these. So I guess, all right, can you beat Clay Collard, right? Why not go over there and just make money? Forget about the title. Forget about the UFC. Maybe that's like your avenue if the UFC lets you out of your contract. Which if you're a guy like Benny Dariush, maybe they do. Maybe they just go, you know what, man, we did kind of hold you on the hook for a while. We might have screwed you out of a title shot. All right, go do your thing. Who knows? It's not crazy. You know, like you said, there are examples of people who have turned things around. But in this particular division, there's just monsters. There's always, since the dawn of time, have been great fighters at 155.
Exactly. That's not a bad option. Now, I'm sure Bellator is going to bring over some of their lightweights along with some of the ones that just competed in the tournament and a free agent or two that the UFC might part ways with. So it could be pretty interesting over at PFL. And I was thinking of something as you were talking. Do you remember when John Fitch was in the UFC for a long time and he was a clear-cut number two to GSP's number one?
Yeah.
He had his one title shot. He came up short. But he derailed a lot of other people from even getting to GSP because he was the gatekeeper to the title, to GSP. And so what did this guy do? He basically hung around until his time was up. I remember he had a little falling out with the UFC. Remember they went public with how much they made and this and that.
Anyway, the video game too, right?
Yeah. At one point, him and Cain Velasquez, they got cut from the UFC for 24 hours, maybe 48. And then they got brought back. Good call by Dana too, man, because Cain wound up being a big name. But my point is, he came over to WSOF before it was PFL. And I remember he won a world title there. And I remember he clutched that belt and it meant so much to him. Yes, it wasn't a UFC belt, but it was a belt of a major promotion that was on TV. And I remember him just, it really, really meant a lot to him. And so even though Benny, I'm sure for the last 10 years has dreamed of winning the UFC belt, I think he could go over to PFL, compete, make some money, possibly win a belt. And that might give him a little bit of satisfaction as his career winds down that, you know, he was a world champion somewhere. OAM looks like he's almost a blueprint to a little bit of what Benny could do. You know, like OAM probably didn't reach a height of what Benny did because Benny was like knocking on the door of a title shot. OAM was never at that point, but look at the career OAM's had, and he looks like he can actually never fight again but be at peace with what he accomplished and the money he made.
That's the thing. I mean, these guys get put in these weird situations. If he remains in the UFC, he's going to make a good payday per fight, but he's going to be fighting killers. Like even when we talk about him taking a step down, they're still really, really good fighters. Like, for instance, look, we're going to get to it, but Bobby Green was a loser that night, right? If you match him up against Bobby Green, neither guy is anywhere near a title fight, but that's still a tough matchup. You see what I'm saying? So like, there's kind of no escaping it. You might as well just make as much money as you can at this point. Like, I don't know. You know, he's a guy that definitely says, I'm not going to beg. He said it plenty of times. Well, guess what? Over there, you don't got to beg. All you got to do is win.
Just perform. Yeah. Congrats to Armand Sarukyan. I'm not taking anything away from him. He was a beast. And I think he's jumping the gun a little bit, and I'll explain why. When it comes to a title shot. Now, I don't blame him for just throwing it out there, right? Hey, I'm on the scene. Take notice. Think of me the next time you guys are in the war room picking big fights. I deliver. Okay, you got it. We will. They will. I will say this. I thought there was one shot that was unnecessary on Armand, on Benny Dariush. And I don't know if I might almost compare it to what Lawler did to Trigg in a way. You know what I'm talking about?
No, really? Yeah.
So he...
I'm actually going to try and see if I can't queue it up while you're
talking. Queue it up, and I'll talk. He knocks him down, and Benny's pretty messed up. And then he comes in, and you'll see that the first time he throws the follow-up punch, he's in more than entitled to do it. The fight is still live, even though Benny fell in an awkward way. It's still like looked like someone who might still be in the fight. So he comes in and he throws this big old follow-up, right? Dan Henderson on Michael Bisping style. It misses, however. It misses. Then the next one catches him and really closes out the party. Now, I don't know how many more there are, but I will say this. Once Mark Smith got in the way, he still threw another one. I didn't like that. He was winding up on a second one when he kind of stopped, almost as if to say, you know, that's a bit too much. No, the one before was a bit too much. Because once the ref gets in there, that's it. Now, this is the end. I don't think I'm going to talk about it again unless someone asks me. So it's not like I lost sleep last night and I won't this morning. But I still felt that because I've seen enough fights to know what's late, what's early, what's uncalled for, what's this, what's that, whatever. I don't even have to hear somebody saying it's the heat of the moment. No, I've seen a lot of heat of the moments. That was one punch too late. Did you find it yet?
I'm getting close.
Okay. You'll see that he throws a punch while Mark Smith is clearly in between him and Benny. He's already knocked him down, and he's already landed the kiss of death. Like, what's the last one for? You know what I mean? And then that last one that he pulls back, almost in a way as if to say, you know, I'm a good guy. I'm going to hold back on this one. I was just thinking, no, you should have done that one the time before. But.
Oh, yeah. I see what you're talking about.
You see what I'm saying?
I think it might be one. One yeah, where if Mark Smith. Yeah, because he's still in there, and he's almost trying to get it around him.
Yes, exactly. Him. Mark Smith is clearly there. And remember, the ref is usually saying stop before they arrive or as they're arriving. You know, if you don't get in between, if you just say stop, but you don't get in between them, you can keep going because you might not even hear stop, to tell you the truth. But it's like I say, true. Look at how he knocked down Benny. Look at Benny's reaction, and then look at the follow-up. There's all kinds of intel that us as fans, the media, the fighters themselves, you know, they've seen, and this guy's done. This guy's done, and Armand's a veteran of the sport. I know he's had more than 20 fights because I think he's 17-3, 19-3 or whatever. He should have known better, but you saw it.
Yeah.
This wasn't a big deal yesterday because Kerry Hadley basically told him to hold his beer. Mm-hmm. And now that fight was before, so in a way the joke kind of doesn't make sense. But Kerry Hadley, everybody was still talking about him. So, yeah, man, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I just hope a Mick Maynard or a Sean Shelby says, hey, look, congrats. We don't know what your next fight is, but we want to tell you this. Go back and look at your winning performance. That punch is a bit too much, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if it's their job to do it. It's their job to put fights together. I don't think it's Dana's job to do it as a promoter, unless he's really, really close with a fighter. I don't know if it's the coaches, but that just felt like, you know, if we're gonna give Kerry Hadley, hey dude, you gotta save these guys a little bit, then I'm gonna say it to the fighters themselves, hey guys. The fight's over, man. You know, like, and look at how Armand actually speaks very eloquently of Beneil, very respectfully. I appreciated that. I liked it. But that still doesn't take away from that was too much, man.
I keep watching it over and over. And the only thing, man, I think you're not going to like this because you just kind of preached about it not being that. The only thing I can think of is it was heat of the moment just because he doesn't really have ill will towards Benny.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of those where you almost see like the switch click, you know, like, oh my God, like I got, but yeah, I mean, Mark Smith was there. He was there. Like there was a punch.
Yeah, he threw around Mark Smith. He threw around Mark Smith. So that to me just wasn't cool.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean he's not a good guy. He might be buying gifts for all kinds of kids for Christmas. He might go to church every Sunday. He might, you know, give speeches or motivational speeches at military bases. It doesn't mean he's a bad guy. I just think at that moment, he went a bit too far. That's all I'm saying.
I think if you ask him, he's got to say something like, yeah, you know, looking back at it, I did overreact a little bit. I apologize. Mm-hmm. But if he tries to get away with saying, nah, the referee's got us, you know, we got to fight till the end. That's not the case here. It's clearly Mark Smith is in there and he's trying to stop the fight. You're not allowing the fight to be stopped.
Right. So it's almost like Pahar is holding on to those holds for so long.
His next, whatever he says and his next move is very important, because otherwise it's going to become a thing, right?
Right. And I don't remember him being a dirty fighter. I think he's a fun fighter to watch. I really loved him versus Gamrot.
That's a great fight.
Yes. And so, you know, him versus what Fiziev, I think might have been another one. This guy's a stud. I like him. But, and Makhachev, even the first Makhachev fight, you know, like, he's shown us he's not going to get just walked through. Mm-hmm. It wasn't Fiziev. It was Silva. I'm sorry. Before Beneil Dariush, he lost to Gamron. He beat Alvarez. I mean, he's been a beast. He's also beat OAM, coincidentally, and Matt Steamrola for Vola. 21-3 is his record. We'll see. The Armenians are very, very intense fellas. And I'd say that if there's a nationality of a fighter, like if you were to tell me, hey, I'm just getting into the sport, who are some of the most intense individuals? I'd probably go, yeah, I think the Armenians are up there. They're as high up there as anyone else.
If it were like F1 racing, they would be on the podium for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It doesn't mean they're bad. It just means they're intense. But, yeah, I felt worse because it was Benny, I suppose. Anyway, Armand Sarukian doesn't deserve a title shot, and I'll tell you why. Did you want to say something?
Well, no, that's what I wanted to talk about. Well, let's get into the reason, because I agree with you. I think he has to say it. It has to be said. But if you look at resumes, he doesn't have really that big of a leg to stand on.
Mm-hmm.
Because right away, you're going to say, look, it just feels like Charles Oliveira is just the direction they're going. Right? But even after that, you go to Justin Gaethje, and you look at his last two fights, Sarukian's on a 3-fight win streak. I feel like Gaethje's 2 fights are better than his 3 fights. It's just, those are very proven guys.
Those are
monsters.
And he's also behind Gamrot, because Gamrot's 23-2, and he beat Sarukian about a year and a half ago. Now, the only thing Sarukian could say is, well, but I beat the guy he lost to after he beat me, which is Beneil Dariush. He'd have a point. However, this is Dariush is out of the way, so now it's just Gamrot versus Sarukian, and that head-to-head is still fresh enough, at least in my mind, 18 mm-hmm. months ago, to say that guy's ahead. That's why that guy was chosen to be a substitute before Volkanovski saved the dance. Remember, it was supposed to be Oliveira versus Makhachev with Gamrot as the backup. When that fight fell through, they went straight to Volkanovski, bypassing Gamrot. I didn't think that was fair. But the fact that Gamrot was there tells me that the UFC also feels like he's up there. So we got Gaethje, who, when he won the BMF title, became a champ. He'll get pay-per-view points when he fights. It's not a unification or anything like that, but it was a path to the title. So I see Oliveira, Gaethje, and Gamrot ahead of this guy.
I think you can argue Gamrot. I think he has a case to argue it a little bit. I don't think he can. Yeah, but it's kind of like the what have you done lately type thing.
Could be, yeah.
I think that can work in his favor, but I don't think he can get around Gaethje is the problem.
Yeah, possibly. We'll see. But I think we're in agreement. He needs to take a fight.
Yeah.
I don't know who it'll be, but yeah. I just think it'll be someone. The guys like Chandler, McGregor, Poirier, they don't seem too interested in fighting I don't want to say no names, but lesser named fighters in the lightweight division.
Right.
I don't know if it's an arrogance. I don't know if it's just one of those where they've made pretty good money, and so they feel like it's a disruptor to their careers or where they're at. See, Poirier, I don't see as someone that's necessarily near a title shot. He's never lost to Makhachev. He's never fought him, but he just lost to Gaethje. So I suppose he could get back in the mix somehow, but you got this Chandler-McGregor fight happening. You got Oliveira and Makhachev happening. You got Gaethje waiting for the winner of Makhachev and Oliveira. And then you got the guys knocking on the door like Gamrot, Armand Sarukian, Rafael Fiziev. He kind of fell off a little bit. He lost to Gaethje and Gamrot back-to-back. Prior to that, he was on a nice roll. So we'll see. I think it's too early. Maybe. Yeah, I think it's too early. Yeah, Grant Dawson just took a big L, man. That loss really, really hurt him. And Bobby Green actually had some nice stock, man. He was as hot as they could get, and then he takes this loss. See, that's the thing. I want to salute the fighters and applaud the fighters when they stay busy. I love it because I think that's how you pick up this momentum, right? And I think that's exactly what Bobby Green did. You know, Bobby Green beating Grant Dawson in October. It was less than 2 months ago. That win really could have sat there for a while, man. Mm-hmm. And you know, Bobby Green had gained a lot of traction. So Ferguson and Grant Dawson back-to-back, both finishes. I thought he could have waited it out, but he went after Hooker. Hooker fell through, and then they gave him Jalen Turner. And now Green kind of, you know, he falls back down.
Well, let me ask you this. Because he's in that situation, does he almost – it's whatever he fights next is almost like it's a little bit of a step, but also kind of a placeholder type fight. Sarukian.
Okay.
Do you almost just – have the fight with Bobby Green at this point? I mean, there's at least there's heat with that, right? Any other name we attach to him is going to be on like a 1-2 fight win streak. It's going to feel like it's beneath him anyway. You might as well add a little heat to it, right?
It will feel like it's beneath him, but then once he says what he has to say, insults him, maybe even uses those exact words, he'll realize, wait a minute, I'm catching this guy off a brutal KO. He's older. He is more popular than I am. And like you said, there's heat. Sure. Let me stay busy and pick up a paycheck. I'll fight Bobby Green while the top of the heap gets sorted out. Maybe he racks up another big win, you know? So it wouldn't be a bad play for Armand Sarukian to explore that.
I think that's what he's got to do, because anybody else that you put in front of him, it's just, they're all going to be kind of like relatively the same guy in the sense. So you might as well, you know, you could probably be the top billing with a fight like that. They're going to sell it well with all the heat going into it. So you might as well.
It's not a bad idea. It's weird because Green just took an awful loss and Sarukian had an amazing win. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but like I say, it's so plugged up at the top that, yeah, the way this shakes out, I don't think it'd be that horrific. Now, Jalen Turner might go, hold on a second. I just beat Bobby Green. Why am I not fighting Armand Sarukian? If we just want to keep him busy, why can't I be that guy? Mm-hmm. He'd have a point.
True. And he's probably got something like an ace up his sleeve, right, for taking the fight.
Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe he's got a little bit more pull now.
And they're on the same timeline, both first round KOs. People can connect the dots. It's not bad. So let's talk about Turner versus Green. I mean, it was over pretty quick, halfway through round one. He knocks down Bobby Green and then viciously stops him. Kerry Hatley was the referee. He does a lot of fights in Texas. I've seen him there a lot. I don't think he's a bad referee. I actually think he's a pretty good referee. I thought he made a mistake on Friday, and it sure was magnified big time. However, I'm going to say this. And I'm not trying to give a hot take or anything. I think it was bad, but it wasn't as bad as people are saying. Dana White going so far as to say it's one of the worst he's ever seen. Yes, it could be possibly interpreted that way, except when Bobby Green was on his back, sorry, on his stomach, and he was covered up, there was a couple shots that Turner threw where you could have went, okay, now's a good time. But Bobby had these subtle moves right when I think a lot of refs would step in, where you thought, oh, I think he's in it. And then a couple more he'd take, and then once again a cover up, and then he had this other little subtle move. Now, granted, after all these passes I'm giving Kerry Hadley, there was a barrage of punches where for sure he should have stepped in even sooner than that. But I think Ariel Helwani had said, he knocks him down here, he should have stopped it. And 20 seconds later, I didn't see it that way. I saw it as he knocked him down, he was viciously hurt, he was covering up. You could have stopped it. Some would have said too early, some would have said spot on. I would have had no problem with it. But like I say, there was a couple movements that Green gave that I think made Hadley go, no, man, I got to give this guy this one last chance. And the problem is there was like two of those, and Turner, man, all 6-4 of them. It looks like he's a right fielder throwing someone out at third base. I mean, he's just winding back and then going, boom, you know, crashing down on the guy. So it does look pretty damn bad. But like I say, I didn't see it as horrifically as others. Like not as one of the worst, because I saw these subtle movements. Maybe if you and I watch the fight together, or if you want to run it back and take a look, you'll see these little subtle movements that I think is what tricked Kerry Hadley into thinking the guy had a little bit of life left.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about, and we're pretty close on the same wave. So here's how. You know when a running back is running downhill and they do that little cut and they do another cut?
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple things that Bobby did that almost worked as that cut, where it just kind of threw you off a little bit, where you were like, wait, he's in it. No, he's not. Wait, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
However, and I think you said it, then it gets to a point where you're like, whoa, you need to get in there.
Yes. Now,
this is the problem. And I think this is the one thing that we can kind of all point to if we're gonna critique what he did. And it doesn't, sometimes it just works out this way. But the way everything went down, he just ended up in a bad spot to actually see correctly what was going on.
Yeah.
And I think that's what hurt him in that latter part of that exchange. And there's nobody we can blame but him. And somebody has to be blamed in the situation.
Right.
And that's the job that he signed up for, you know? But then that's where you kind of look at your body of work and you say, all right, guys, look, I done fucked up. I know people are all over me, but overall, do you guys think I'm a horrific guy that just needs to go away?
I don't.
You're probably going to go, no, I mean, you know, you fucked this one up. But yeah, but something has to be done. And he has to accept that. That we're all going to look at him and say, we need something to happen. You have to go away for a little while.
So that's going to be my question to you guys on Spinning Back Click tomorrow. But because we're so close, I don't want to go, we'll save it for tomorrow. Give us a preview.
Well, okay.
What would you suggest? The question for tomorrow is going to be, Goes, you are the head of the Texas Athletic Commission, so this guy works for you. What do you do as that guy? Or let's say the Texas Athletic Commission guy goes, I didn't see anything wrong with it. And now the UFC finds themselves back in Texas for whatever reason. So you're Dana White or Mark Ratner or whatever. Do you then say, hey, look, on our behalf, this is a suggestion we have. How would you handle it?
Okay, so what I would do is I've been in this game long enough to know that when referees have these hiccups, they tend to work in like twos and threes. It almost avalanches. And I've always wondered why that tends to happen. You know, any of the great referees, you point at them, they've had this stretch where they've just had these bad calls, you know, and they're relatively close to each other. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I can think of, and especially nowadays with social media and everybody's opinion is just one button away, I think it's just too much, man. The same way, like when a cop shoots somebody, regardless of whether they were wrong or right, they have to get away from their job for a little bit.
Like 2 weeks, right? Or something like that. Right. With pay. And I mean, that's the cop. Obviously, these guys, if they don't work, they don't get paid. But
because mentally, you're just not in the right space to handle a job that requires this much stress. So I, you know, a lot of people will say, like, you just got to get him right back in there. You got to get him back right. But I don't think it works that way. I think he's been through too much.
Like Viper and what he told Gesture with Maverick, the first movie?
Right.
You got to get him back up in the sky.
In this case, I think that's the wrong thing to do. I think he's got too much in his head. I think these emotions are going to be carrying over into the next fight. He might stop that one too soon now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, He just needs to decompress and get away. Whether that's a month, 2 months, whatever it is, but something has to be done, because at the same time, you have promoters, you have fans, you have media, you have fighters. They're all saying, what the hell? Why is my guy not being protected? So you have to do something. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I do think at the same time, you have to sit down and say, look, that doesn't mean we need to get rid of him, because whoever we replace him with, there's a good chance they're not as good as Kerry Hatton.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So
exactly.
That's the problem. Like, it's not like any other job where there's just another dude waiting in line, give me my spot, and he's going to come and he's going to shock the world. Like, the thing about this job is repetition. And if you're not
getting an experience,
so you can't just replace these guys with Joe Schmo. So I think you just got to take him out of the equation just for a little bit, you know, and I think it'll do everybody good. And then, yeah, bring him back into the fold. But we also just can't pretend like nothing happened. Like, there's got to be some kind of consequence.
What'll be interesting, and I have no idea how often Texas promotes fights. They might have a bunch of small leagues, you know, going every weekend, and maybe Terry Hadley, you know, he gets his reps there. Who knows what? I would definitely say you can't take a fight for a month. I don't care what level it is. And for 3 months, and I'm not saying that anyone's health is more important than others. Sarukian and Dariush's health is not more important than Veronica Hardy and North or whatever her name was, the first one of the night. They're all important. But I do believe the pressure is a little greater higher up on the card, for sure. So I would say you can't ref for one whole month, but for the next 3 months, we don't want you in a co-main event or in a main event. Let's get you back on some of the fights that are less stressful. They move a little slower because obviously they're not the higher ranked athletes. And let's just see how you perform there. And if things are back to normal, then boom, you're right back at it. He may not like that, but I think it'll be good for him once he accepts it. That I think that time will go by quickly, for one. And two, I think it'll be good for him or her, in this case, him.
Yeah. I sometimes, especially in our sport, we tend to be, there's no middle ground. You know, we're either overreacting or we're underreacting. Mm-hmm. We have to be more in the middle here and just figure out, all right, man, what happened? It sucked. Trust me, I'm with you. It really, really sucked. And who knows what that does to Bobby Green? Who knows if Bobby Green doesn't come back right because of that? So there has to be some kind of penalty. But at the same time, there's just not enough people. There's not enough fights to have these people train to just be throwing people on the bench and bringing on the next guy. The next guy, I almost guarantee you, is not going to do a better job than Kerry Hadley.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, congrats to Jalen Turner taking the fight on 2 weeks' notice. Smashed Bobby Green. Armand Sarukian smashed Beneil Dariush. Big fights await those guys. Neither one will get a title shot. I think we can all agree on that. But still, their stock went way up. These are statement wins. These are emphatic wins. These are, you know, momentum swingers in their career. So it's huge for both guys. The good thing is, I guess I'm jumping the gun here, they also got bonuses. So that's good. You know how I feel about those. I think every finisher should get a bonus. And lo and behold, Dana White gave every finisher a bonus on Saturday night. And that includes Turner and Sarukian. So, I think that leads us into talking about the rest of the card. Let me give the results of the rest of the card so you'll know who else won and who else got these bonuses. Davison Figueiredo defeated Rob Font. He decisioned him. He didn't finish him. But big, big statement win for Davison Figueiredo, former flyweight champion, moving up. And we thought, you're taking on one of the top guys. This could be too much for you, Figgy. Hell no, he looked good against Rob Font. Rob Font just did not, he couldn't get going. Sean Brady defeated Kelvin Gastelum. Man, Gastelum looked good against Chris Curtis in Miami earlier in the year at 185. I thought, oh shit, he's coming back to 170. He's still only 32 years old. He's going to be quicker and sharper. Man, he just didn't look that good against Sean Brady. But he says he'll be back strong, and he plans on competing at 170. So we'll see. Joaquin Silva defeated Clay Guida. Dude, I was ready to tell Clay Guida, let me know when the fight's over. I'll be there to pick up your gloves. Great career. But Guida didn't look bad. Goes for a 41-year-old. He still has pace. He still throws combos. And, you know, it's not the prettiest striker in the world or prettiest strikes in the world. But the wrestling doesn't go away. He wins rounds. If he wants to keep fighting, God bless him. God bless Jim Miller. It's when they start looking like shit where I'm like, hey, guy, that's it. You know, your run's over. But he still does it, and people get excited. Someone was asking me today, why? Why does this guy not go away? And I told him, okay, he's got the walkout song. They, you know, they all related to him. He's got the slap from the brother. He used to have the hair, no longer the hair. The pace. He belches in between rounds. You know, he wins fights, enough key fights along the way. He's from Chicago. He's a carpenter. He relates to the carpenters. Like, what's not to like about him? Just let him do his thing until he sucks. He hasn't sucked yet.
Yeah, this actual fight card was really, really weird. I hope you didn't well. I know you bet on some of these fights, right?
Yeah, I didn't do well.
Yeah, like, I don't blame you. It just really didn't make much sense. I saw two fighters in Rob Font and Kelvin Gastelum who just were 1 second behind in everything that was going on. They look so frustrated. The thing about those two guys is they've had these types of performances and they've turned it around. Hopefully they can again, because they're good fighters. They deserve to be there. Mm-hmm. And then Clay Guida, yeah, I don't know what the fuck happened there, but like, his cardio is just, it never goes away. He's never tired. And he's the Tasmanian devil. He's basically the Tasmanian devil in MMA, and he would not go away, dude. But I'm all for him sticking around if he fights like that.
I just thought he was going to finally hit a wall, and I thought this guy would do it. But, man, he would not go away. He was like almost a 3-1 underdog, but he was still in the fight. People are into him. I don't know what else I can really, really say, man. He's just pretty legit dude. But, you know, like I say, I think him, Arlovsky, Miller, they just have the open invitation to keep fighting until something happens. And the same goes for Misha Tate. I thought Misha Tate, this could be it. Even she said this could be it. It wasn't it. She actually looked pretty damn good.
Yeah, there you go. That's another one. She was just felt like she was one step ahead too. Mm-hmm. 2-10-8 rounds, man, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she just went after Avila. Pinned her against the wall, kept taking her down. Oh, and by the way, Guida was landing some nice takedowns, but I got to give Silva props. Silva kept getting up really quick. Therefore, it nullified the takedown, or at least it didn't allow the judge to score based off the takedown. And fighters, look at what Joaquin Silva did, because that's what you do, man. The minute you can pop up and make it look like there wasn't much to that, it'll maybe be counted like a leg strike or a jab or something like this. You got to do something with that takedown. Guida was, like I say, relentless, and he landed some of them. He just couldn't keep them down. So that's what you want to do if you are someone that gets taken down. But Misha Tate, she was able to keep Avila down and mount her and attack her and do it for long, prolonged periods of time. So great for her. I'm glad she wants to keep on fighting. That doesn't mean that she's going to win her next one, but she sure looked good in this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the way, that getup was just kind of like Chuck Liddell, right? Isn't that what he used to do back in the
day?
Get taken down. And there was really nothing special to it other than he just stood back up.
Yeah. And you got to do that quick, because everyone's mind is racing as to the type of positioning you want. You know, are some guys like half guard, full guard, side control, up against the fence, drag them in front of the coaches. But if you can basically, once you know you're going for a ride, already start to maybe, you know, get up, then that's going to go a long way. Usually the flyweights are real hard to keep down. They usually spring back up. But that, I think that's what prevented Joaquin Silva from possibly losing this fight, because he was in a position to possibly lose it. But because he didn't allow Guida to maximize those takedowns, you know, he was in it. Now, Stolfus, I shouldn't have skipped over him. Dustin Stolfus defeated Pona Soriano. And he would take down Puna Soriano, and he actually made him, he threw him for a couple rides. He would keep him down, and Soriano, his process of getting up would take longer. And so would knock minutes off the clock. Stolfus would mix in a knee or some strikes or an elbow or a forearm, and that allowed him to secure it. Plus, Soriano was taking damage. But Stolfus is actually a great example of how those takedowns were converted into points of some sort, unlike Guida's, but maybe not as much as Misha's either, because Soriano did get back to his feet. Julia Avila, she could not get to her feet for to save her life. So congrats to Stolfus. He was a big, big underdog against Soriano, and he took some of Soriano's best shots, that straight left, man. It's whether it's a counter left or a lead left, it is powerful, and it's knocked a lot of guys out. But Stolfus, he also put down Soriano once, and like I say, his grappling was really, really good.
Puna and Danny Gay, same camp, but they're just two guys that got to figure this out, because this trajectory of, you know, win a couple, lose a couple, win one, lose one, that ain't going to work. But Puna, I feel like, is in more danger. I don't get it, because he hits really, really hard. He's from a camp that really does stress the wrestling. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's not clicking for that guy, but I always see him in the gym. He is a good fighter. It just doesn't seem to click the night of the fight.
And him and Dan, they're, you know, you don't know too many Hawaiians that wrestled in high school. You know, a lot of them just throw down in the streets, or they play other sports well or whatever. But those two, Ray Cooper, they actually wrestled in high school, so they've embraced the grind. But yeah, I'd love to see Soriano, instead of avoiding the ground, just to throw hands every once in a while, mix in his own takedowns and see what his ground and pound is like. Yeah, I mean, it sucks, because they're nice guys and they're always in the gym, like you said, but they're losing these key fights that are preventing them from following in the footsteps of some of the other Hawaiians. You know, maybe not Penn and Holloway, but, you know, someone like a Brad Tavares, who's been punching the clock for about a good dozen years now, man. Mm-hmm. It's because he wins instead of 2 out of 4, 3 out of 4, you know, or maybe goes on a 4-fight win streak, then loses a fight. It seems like Soriano's, he's now at 9-4, so that means he's lost a few. We don't want these guys to get cut, that's for sure. I'll give this. What I was about to say was, we want to see them improve. And he did, because you know what? I didn't see him huff and puff like I have seen him in other fights. So that's a step. But, you know, it's just the improvement's got to come in bigger waves. How about Cody Brundage and Dracar Close, both finishing their fight via a slam, in which they were caught, basically. Well, not caught, but they were getting an attack from the bottom, in Brundage's case, by previously undefeated Zach Reese, and Dracar Close's case, by UFC vet Joe Selecki. They were getting, you know, attacked from the bottom, you know, triangles and arm bars or whatever. In this case, triangles. And both guys picked up their opponent, and when they went to slam them, they left the possibility that the slam might even push the arm further towards the fighter that's going to torque on the arm, or at least use the arm to pull you closer. You know, because the triangle, one of the arms is usually caught inside. And instead, they slammed the guys both on the side of their heads, and both immediate knockouts. And they were both around the 149 mark, 140 mark. One was 141, one was 149. Two endings identical, but very rare in this sport.
Very. And, you know, when this has happened before in the past, it's been just as devastating. But one thing I've never seen is just a head thump the way it did, like in the Dracar Close one, like that's just nasty, dude. I'll never forget the one that always stands out to everyone, I think, is Ricardo Arona, right? When Rampage, just because Rampage had him so high up in the air, mm-hmm. and then brought him down like that, that was horrible. I think he even landed a punch afterwards.
Yeah, and Matt Hughes won his title against Carlos Newton. He was basically on the way out, and I think I think he was passing out as his instinct to slam him happened. It's just, you know, I get in arguments with people about this a little bit because I actually did the, when we were talking about the 30 greatest fighters in UFC history, I'm the one that voiced over Hughes, right? Mm-hmm. And so we got tagged or whatever it's called, collaborated on Instagram. And people were like, well, Newton should have won. And I'm like, look, I'm not disputing that Newton didn't have him. But they both came down. It's just one guy was more awake than the other one. Yeah. And that's who they gave the title to. But I'm not disputing that Carlos Newton didn't have a nice secure triangle. It's just he got slammed and he was completely out, whereas Hughes was on his way out. And by the time the commotion was over, you know, Hughes was the one that was awarded the fight. But yeah, that was another one I could think of.
Yeah.
Anyway, congrats to both guys. Rodolfo Bellotto, Jared Gooden, Veronica Hardy also won. Now, who are the eight $50,000 winners? Gooden, Bellator, Close, Brundage, Tate, Stolfus, Brady, Turner, and Sarukian all won $50,000. Way to go, Dana White. Kudos to you for this event. I wish you would do it for every event. He was asked about it. He just thought, hey, how can I not do it? The fighters performed great. The only thing I say is you haven't done it in other fights where fighters have performed great. That's why we bitch about it. We just want a little bit of consistency. But this is a perfect way to do it. I hope in 2024 they all get it. I think it'll motivate the fighters. I think a lot of fighters will know third round, I might be up two rounds to nothing, but I'm going for it. I want the 50 G's, baby. And
especially but, around the holidays.
Supposedly, this was a very highly highly attended fight night. 14,000. There's been pay-per-views that have gotten less than 14,000. So they had 14,000 in Austin, Texas, and a high grossing gate. Maybe that's what got Dana super excited. Who knows? But a finish is a finish. You know, the fighters don't get to choose where they are at. They go where you tell them. So, you know, in the past, they asked them, hey, how come some bonuses are 85,000, some are 60,000? And so he said, you know what I'm going to do is instead of having just the pay-per-views or this card or that card or this amount, or that, it's just going to be 50,000. That way no one can bitch. Okay, well, guess what? That was like 10 years ago. Now just do 50,000 every finish, and there you go. No one can bitch. All you got to do is make weight and don't act like a jackass in the hotel. Thrash the room or get in some sort of a fight or hurt someone from the general public and you're eligible. That should be the norm going forward.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. Speaking of, what'd you make of that whole Sarukian and Green thing? I guess we'll bring those guys back before we move to BKFC, but two videos came out. those guys don't like each other, that's for sure. And we talked about this earlier about why they should match them up, but you think the UFC's kind of, you know, Dana says there's a lot of stuff we don't know that goes on behind the scenes, almost like this is the norm.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I've kind of racked my brain about this a little bit. And I honestly, I guess the only thing I can fall back on is the UFC is so lackadaisical when it comes to like these things going down that they're just kind of like, fighters are going to be fighters. You know, they're going to say the things they want. I'm not going to tell them to stop. And that I think fighters maybe just gain a little bit of momentum and think they can kind of just do whatever. And one of these situations, one day, somebody innocent's going to get hurt. You know, somebody's going to look. We have an 80-year-old mom that fell and cracked her her hip, right? Fractured her hip. That can very well happen in one of these situations. A fighter jumping into a crowd or whatever, bumping over the wrong person. One of these days, something like that's going to happen. Now, I don't know what that means. Does that mean two more security guards need to be everywhere at all times with these fighters? I don't know, because for the most part, this doesn't really happen. And even if it did, are they going to stop them? Like, I think it's really just comes down to the fighter.
And the camps, seem to get out of control a little bit too. Didn't seem to happen in this one. I'm all for, you know, you got your training partner and your coach. I'm talking about the camps that roll 20, 30, 40 deep. But the camps might not have nothing to lose. You know, you could hear one of the guys separating them saying, hey, come on, your prize fighters. main event. I think one of them was saying main event to somebody. Probably
you know, the UFC employee.
Yeah. So something to try and get through the fact that, hey, you're here to fight for money on Saturday. This whole thing about the streets are coming at me, or this is how we get down. We get it. You don't have to convince us. You don't have to convince us that you're willing to get down, but that's in the past. You're a prize fighter for this week in the UFC.
I'll tell you what I would do, George.
Just don't do that. Like, I mean, I don't know.
If I'm Sean Shelby, Mick Maynard, if I'm Dana White, whatever, I just pick up the phone and I go, hey, guys, I get it. The type of sport we're in. I get you were upset with him. But if you ever do shit like that again, I'm not going to have the confidence in you to put you in a main event. So don't ask me to be up in these high-level fights if they mean so little to you that you're willing to put the card at risk. I just can't do that. Done. And leave it at that. And hopefully something like that sticks in a fighter's brain where they go, man, I could just see this guy after the fight, or I could see him on the streets or whatever, but I can't do this right now. I don't want to put my career in jeopardy.
Yeah, and it really was Sarukian that popped things off the first time. He went to Green with the camera crew and some people and some backup. Green was trying to tell him, hey, get these guys away from me. And then Green found an opportunity for a little bit of the payback. I mean, if you think about it, that's very similar to what happened with McGregor and Khabib. Khabib had a go at Artem Lobov. And then McGregor found out about it, loaded up his plane, came back, and that's how things kind of got ugly because they didn't squash it early on. Mm-hmm. And so I think these fighters need to be spoken to and said, look, you may have some sort of a beef with someone here or whatever, but the fighting can't happen, or we'll just, I don't know if they can threaten to pull him off the fight, because in this case, it would have been the main eventer. I don't know if they can say you're not eligible for bonuses. I don't know what they can do, but it's not necessary, is it? It's, how can I put it to you? Those guys that get in fights outside of a soccer stadium, they've pre-planned it, the hooligans. You guys aren't hooligans. You guys are professional prize fighters. You know, stakes are high. At some point, Sarukian wants to fight for a title. I don't think the UFC wants a world championship that comports himself like that, where at any moment something can happen in a hotel lobby. Like, it's just not a good look.
All right.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. Spinning Backlick every Monday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. These types of topics we discuss with our colleagues, and we go a little bit more in depth. And a few of these, we'll be touching on them tomorrow. So check it out. It's live every Monday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Myself and Goes, and a couple of the writers or editors, or in this case, a fight analyst. He'll be on tomorrow. It's a fun time. It's an hour long. You can participate in the show, submitting questions or comments via the chat. So it's a perfect show for a hardcore MMA fan. It's always on Monday, reacting after the fights, after the week's news. Check it out. Spinning Backlick over at MMA Junkie, or go to YouTube and subscribe right now. Hit that little bell so you're aware of when we go live, and you'll be all set to go. It's youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. We just got a few minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about bare knuckle fighting. We lost the fight on Friday, I believe. Ben Rothwell came down with an illness, so he couldn't fight Todd Duffy in the co-main event. However, main event was intact. Eddie Alvarez versus Mike Perry. Mike Perry defeats Eddie Alvarez. Eddie Alvarez communicated to his corner that something was wrong, and the corner thought it was best, and so they basically threw the towel in, and the fight ended in between rounds. Congrats to Mike Perry. Great fight while it was going on. Alvarez hit him pretty good, but like he said, this guy, what do you call him, a pickaxe or something like that? He goes, this guy can take a lot, man.
Yeah, so it was weird because for as much praise as we're about to give Mike Perry, he was losing that fight. You know, Eddie Alvarez was taking it to him. He just didn't have the power to finish him off. But, I mean, he was connecting a lot on Mike Perry. And I thought he wobbled him a couple times, too. It's just the ones that Mike Perry landed, he really made count in that situation. And so, yeah, they get back to the corner, and you can just hear his corner saying, dude, you can't even see out of that eye. We have to stop this. And so it looked like his orbital bone was probably fractured, and it was just starting to swell up very bad, where like most of his cheek was really big, and it was starting to move into his eye. And in these type of fights, it's just way too dangerous. And I think it was an excellent call. I thought Eddie handled it well. But Eddie was just a little bit smaller than Mike Perry. And I don't know if I want to see something like that again.
Mm-hmm.
But Mike Perry, like, oh my God, you're attaching him to these fights that are just complete chaos. Like, how do you not want to tune in and see this guy? And now he's learning through his interviews, like, the right things to say. He's a superstar over there, dude, an absolute superstar. Dave Feldman has an absolute superstar. Because if you take Mike Perry and you put him back in MMA, I think people want to tune in. It'll be entertaining, but MMA just might not be his sport. I think this he's found his calling. The question is, how much of this can you do? What is like your life force? Because you look at a guy like Luis Palomino, he's been doing it for quite a while, but he has a different style. He can get in there and brawl, but he's not all about brawling either. Mike Perry's all about brawling. So I don't know what the shelf life is here, but I can't wait to see him go at it again. And I'd love to see Eddie Alvarez do it again, just more with somebody his size. You know, like the last fight, like Chad Mendes was a little bit of the smaller guy going up against Eddie Alvarez. Somebody more his size, but I'd love to see Mike Perry again.
And Eddie, if you think about when he fought Connor, he looked undersized against Connor, and Connor was the featherweight moving up. Mm-hmm. So he was never really the biggest 55er. And Perry was pretty solid 170 guy. But yeah, he was just a bigger guy. They're both tough. Fun fight to watch. Perry's 4-0 now. He's beating Page, Michael Venom Page, Julian Lane, Eddie Alvarez, and Luke Rockhold. I mean, those are all household names where we can connect the dots. We can't even say, oh, you're jumping the gun. Hell no, those are some good fighters. Mm-hmm. So I expect a lot from Perry. I think Perry's quickly becoming one of the GOATs over there.
Definitely.
And, you know, I think aside from Luis Palomino, who owns two belts and has never lost, he's like at 9-0 or something like that. I think he's the GOAT over at Bare Knuckle, but Perry's probably more popular than Palomino, very marketable, and has a bright, bright future.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Mike Perry has kind of alluded to Palomino before as just not being a draw. But eventually, you keep winning like that, they got to make that fight happen.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Palomino's fights just kind of quietly come and go. I'm not sure if he's a favorite down there or what. At one point, I thought they were going to go to Peru with him, but that fight hasn't happened. Maybe that was around the COVID time. Who knows? But the rest of the card was as follows. Again, no Duffy, no Rothwell, but we still had some other fights. Christine Ferreira defeated Beck Rawlings. That was a title fight, and so Ferreira hangs on to her title at 125 pounds. Kai Stewart defeated Howard Davis. That was a title fight. Kai Stewart wins. Mick Terrell defeated Arnold Adams. He's now your new heavyweight champion because Alan Belcher no longer is. I think a Rothwell Duffy winner could be in line to fight Mick Terrell, but that fight supposedly is going to go down on a February show, so we'll see. Jeremy Stevens defeated Jimmy Rivera. He got a bad cut in the middle of the fight. So Stevens wins that fight. That's the same Jimmy Rivera that used to fight in the UFC. He's now a police officer in New Jersey. And yeah, that's pretty much the recognizable names from the MMA world that have crossed over and done their thing at Bare Knuckle. That was Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship 56 in Salt Lake City Center, Salt Lake City, Utah, at the Maverick Center. Again, congrats to Mike Perry winning kind of the equivalent of the BMF title. He's the King of Violence. King of Violence Championship is what he took down. So that's pretty cool. All right. Aside from that, you know, there are a few things. Look, I'll tell you real quick. Sean Brady really wants Ian Garry. Now, Gary's got this fight coming up against Vicente Luque. And he used to train with Brady and Luque at Kill Cliff. And then he had the whole thing where he moved to the UK and was training with Leon Edwards. Supposedly he was asked to leave that gym. So Gary's just been all over the place. And if you recall, Gary came at Neil Magny in a way. I don't know. This guy was kind of likable about 6 months ago. And now all of a sudden he's one of the most ridiculed fighters out there by a lot of people. If you really want to do a deep dive into it, just Google it. A lot of people have been doing videos exposing how difficult he is and how a bizarre individual he's in or a relationship he might be in. Who knows? Stuff that really I don't necessarily want to talk about. I'll leave that to others. But Sean Brady really wants a part of Ian Garry. Now, look, Ian Garry's undefeated, and he's been smashing. So that's not a bad call out for Ian Garry. Sorry, for Sean Brady. And Misha Tate's going to stay at 135. She says 125 was a mistake, but she does see herself possibly fighting for a title at some point. Figueredo says he wants Sean O'Malley, promises he'll finish him. So things like that, things like that. Check them out all on MMA Junkie, all kinds of great stories, fallouts from this past weekend, and excellent coverage of the sport of mixed martial arts along with the other combat sports that kind of saddle up to it. Like we got Boxing Junkie, right? And Ryan Garcia bounced back after that loss to Gervonta Davis. He had an 8th round KO of Oscar Duarte. So our colleague over at Boxing Junkie, you'll see a story regarding that. You'll see some bare knuckle fighting championship stuff every once in a while, some submission grappling stuff. So it's an awesome website. You'll love it. But we're going to get on out of here for now. We'll see you all tomorrow on Spinning Backlick, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. It's every Monday and it's live. Check it out. We'll see you then. Go out and be a champion.